This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Timbuktu's World Music CD Shop, featuring sounds from around the globe, plus American roots and eclectic contemporary music. Timbuktu's, located at 4726 Southeast Hawthorne in Portland, is now open 7 days a week. Information at 503-239-0179 or on the web at timbuktu's.com.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Between the Covers host Alice Perry as she interviews writer and poet Julia Alvarez. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories, which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com. And coming up today on the Radio Zine at 9:30, the guests are peace activists Dot Maver and Gary Spanovich, who will discuss the campaign to form a Department of Peace and Nonviolence within the federal government. The host is Michelle Schroeder Fletcher. At 10, Tammy Dean speaks with journalist Tom Zollner, author of The Heartless Stone, A Journey Through the World of Diamonds, Deceit and Desire. At 10:30 on Stage and Studio, hear about C.V. Vanka and Rhythmic Delights and their concert with Portland Tyco and singer and actor Jim Chan's one-man show at the Jasmine Tree Restaurant. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, you'll listen to the decision not to indict Karl Rove, a look at the investigation of the killing of 9 Palestinians last week in an Israeli airstrike, and a report on abuse in American prisons. And here's Alice Perry's interview with Julia Alvarez.
Hello, I'm Alice Perry with Between the Covers, and this is KABU Radio. Today it is my pleasure to interview Julia Alvarez, author of How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents and In the Time of the Butterflies. Today we will talk about her new novel, Saving the World. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you for having me.
Your new book is about, well, about many things. It's an adventure story. It's a love story. It's a book about love and altruism and ambition. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea for this?
Well, it's a novel with two interwoven stories, one of them a historical story and the other one a contemporary story. The historical story is based actually on a little-known historical episode that happened in 1803, which was the smallpox expedition, and it left Spain in 1803 till 1806. And what it was that Dr. Balmes went around the world with a newly discovered smallpox vaccine, but it was the days before refrigeration. So the carriers were little boys. The first 22 were taken from an orphanage in Spain, and they brought the vaccine across the Atlantic by being sequentially vaccinated. And then once they landed in the New World, they went a new crop of little boys were taken, and they took the vaccine to the Philippines, and then on, Dr. Balmes went on and went to China and around the world back to Spain, 1803 to 1806. So that seemed to me an incredible story, the story of that expedition, and especially when I found out that not only did the rectoress of the orphanage release those first 22 boys, but somehow she got herself invited to go along. She was not in the original proclamation. And once the boys were deposited in an orphanage in New Spain, Mexico, she went along with a new crop of carriers to the Philippines. So that seemed to me a very interesting, engaging, astonishing story of the first global attempt to eradicate a deadly disease. And the contemporary strand is about a writer who discovers the story and gets, in a way, intrigued, haunted by it. And in the process, things that might be almost parallel issues in her own time, contemporary time, with the AIDS epidemic, these things come to her doorstep, given what her life story is about, that I won't try to elaborate. But part of the novel is what, you know, since she knows this Isabel story, the smallpox story, and she's going, things start to happen in her world. And part of what's interesting is to see these two stories side by side and see what kind of a resonance happens between them. And also, what happens when someone like Alma, the contemporary character, knows the historical story? What does it mean when we read something and we're taken by it, we're engaged, we fully respond to it, and we are therefore carriers ourselves of that narrative? What happens then when things happen in our world? How do we use those stories that moved us to make choices and to respond to maybe some of the similar issues in our own time?
So there's a lot of things I'd like to explore there. The whole issue of what you take and use to make choices as you go about trying to do good things in the world. Do the means justify the ends ever? And at the same time, before we jump into some of those questions, you mentioned this story is told from the perspective of two women.
Mm-hmm.
Two strong women in many ways, but at the same time, women that have their own vulnerabilities. What was the importance in telling the story through the eyes of a woman's perspective?
Well, you know, I think it's funny. I do think of them as strong women, but I think of them as women who are flawed and scared and vulnerable. And, you know, at first when people would say, oh, they're such courageous women, I would think, oh, my God, no, they're so scared. And then I thought, yes, that's what courage is. You don't need courage if you're not scared and you just, you know, barge ahead. It doesn't matter. You don't need that to summon that quality in yourself, that strength in yourself. So, yeah, they are courageous women in that they, for whatever reasons, are forced into very hard situations. And they somehow try to keep faith with the things that are grand. You know, that's part of one of the things in the novel. How do we keep faith with those things that are important for us not to forget as humane human beings? So anyhow, so I do think they're strong. And, you know, I think for me it was such a find to learn that this expedition, one woman went along, unheard of in those times, in that kind of a scientific expedition. And to me, that's what opened up the story, because I know the story, and we all learn the stories from the victors' perspectives in school, often males, often of European white background. You know, the victors' stories are the ones that get passed down because they're the ones with the power to spread the word. And so for me, it's more and more interesting to discover the stories that are like that word solemncest, you know, which is the layering in a manuscript that where you can see under the first layer faint writing that was covered over. For me, those stories are very interesting. The stories that don't, that can't somehow get out there into a sort of a, you know, the corporate mouthpiece, and therefore are the stories that have to work hand to hand, and that's why I use the term carriers, that, you know, we become carriers of these stories when we hear them and we pass them on, and they're important stories because they encode important information for us that we mustn't forget. And I think the female information of history that we don't often get in the books that we read is an important perspective. And since a lot of it wasn't written down because they didn't have the access to, or the education, or the ability, or the encouragement to write that down, I think historical fiction gives us a wonderful opportunity to go back and try to imagine these characters and their point of view during those historical times that they lived.
And let's talk a little bit about Isabella's point of view and her motivation. On her one hand, what may seem, if you look at it one way, her questionable ethics of allowing these orphan boys to go off across the sea, and then her courageous decision to go with them, even though she had her own motivation for making that choice. What is that mix of both taking risks with other people's lives, but taking a risk to come up with some greater good? And I remember at one point in the book when there was going to be a compromise in the deal she had made with Don Francisco, where the boys who had already been vaccinated were not going to go on to the rest of the journey. She stood up and right. said no. Yeah. I guess in looking at that part of the story, what information does that give us as readers, as activists, as workers in our world trying to do good? What can this bring to us as we evaluate those questions of...
Yeah. I think the thing that Isabella learns, and the things that I, Julia Alvarez, learned from Isabella and Alma, are that those are questions without answers, and rightly so. I think the minute we have answers and we have rules and we have black and whites and we can sort of make decisions of, you know, how much collateral damage, and using those kinds of terms that mask that individual people are getting sacrificed for something, I think that's dangerous, a dangerous way of thinking. And I think it's an easier way of thinking. It allows us to barge ahead and make choices and not consider the very real losses in terms of specific human beings and human terms. I mean, I think part of what the novel is exploring is that that's not going to save the world, even if we're doing things that look on paper or ultimately like they're great humanitarian things. That really, the kinds of salvation efforts I trust are always questioning and balancing and trying to proceed the way a novel proceeds, which is that there isn't a right and a wrong point of view. There isn't the good and the bad. There isn't the enemy and the hero. But that that we're all part of a human family. And what novels do is that they enter us at that level into issues, you know, at that human level that we all share, you know, this experience of being alive, that we all feel the basic feelings, that we are all really connected, and borders and politics and ideologies, you know, fly over the top of a novel, because that's not what a novel is about. And that in making decisions, it's always harder and more complicated, and you anguish so much more when you really look at it from all of the points of view and try to take that in and then make the best decisions that you can, given that. That's the best that you can ask, I think, or the most that you can ask of us. Because we're flawed human beings. You know, we go at issues with our own mixed bag of you know, noble feelings and then self-serving feelings. And, you know, but if you try as much as possible to keep a clean windshield as you proceed, even though it's going to keep getting dirty, I think that's the most that we can ask. And that's why I love, you know, novels, and I love stories, and I love poems, because I think that they return us to that level of paying attention, which I think is the best that we can bring to any issue.
This is Alice Perry interviewing Julia Alvarez on her new novel, Saving the World. As you were talking, I was thinking of Alma's best friend in the novel, Tara,
yeah.
And a woman who seems dear to my heart anyway, but just a gung-ho activist who really cares, but in her caring sometimes is so caught up in the everything of it,
yeah,
that it becomes too much.
Right.
And it's like Alma and Tara balance each other, and they know that,
yeah.
and they respect that, but... I thought that was also a nice part of the novel, in that there are going to be all sorts of us out there doing the work, doing the good work,
right.
sometimes often making mistakes.
Right.
And that we can check each other. We can check each other in ways that are sometimes hurtful or good.
Right.
But I the friendships in the book, well, there's a lot of friendships between women in the modern parallel story. Alma and Tara, Alma and Helen, an older
woman. Yeah.
And interestingly, because Isabella is in the historical part of the book, is surrounded by men.
I know.
She doesn't have that luxury. Well, she did when she was back in the orphanage, but
yeah.
Talk a little bit about how that was writing those two different
points of view. Isabella's in a world of men. The ship that they sailed across the ocean, that they sailed to the New World with, it had a crew of 28 men. The expedition was 10 grown men, and then the 22 boys, and then there was Isabel. And I remember writing about Isabel, and at one point, when they land in New Spain, and they show up at the viceroy's house at night, because they came in late, and the viceroy's wife comes down. After the viceroy has come down, she hears all the commotion, and she comes down, and from the stairs she calls down, you know, is everything all right? And Isabel's first reaction, and I realized, oh my God, yes, I understand this character, was, oh, how lovely, a woman's voice.
Right.
That she would, you know, that she would be missing. And she, of course, has a very close friendship with her helper in the orphanage, Natividad, Nati, whom she leaves behind. And part of her loneliness for a woman, in a way, helps shape the form, because one of the chapters she's writing her letters to Nati. You know, she's writing letters back, giving her information on how the expedition is going, because it's a way to stay connected to that, you know, woman friendship that she's missing so much in this world of men. Whereas Alma, yes, Alma has strong female relationships that are really important to her. And as she says about her activist friend, Tara, and you're right, Tara, she's like the earth, Tara. But she sometimes is a terror in her vehement, you know, push to save the world. You know, and she's got her strong feelings about it. But what's wonderful about Tara is that she, through her friendship, is able to see herself and realize where she missteps. And Alma, through her friendship with Tara, as she says, I would be a petite soul. I wouldn't become the larger version of myself if I didn't have this friendship that constantly challenged me to go that step further out of my own pettiness or small-mindedness. So it is a powerful relationship there, you're right.
Well, I'm looking at exploring more of those relationships and some of the more ethical questions that the book really draws us to think about. And Alma's older friend, Helen, has had in her own way a challenging life, but she's really a quiet, calm, seems like a very centered woman. And she has her own challenge in that of her son and her daughter-in-law. And can you talk a little bit about it? It's not a central part of the story, and yet it poses, again, one of those, when are we doing good? What steps do we take?
Right. Because Helen, the elderly character, has a kind of son who's gone off the deep end because of the things he's seen and his outrage at some of the situations that he's been exposed to in the world. In the novel, Alma is very much, for her, Helen, this elderly woman, is the mother that she never had, in a sense. You know, it's a very close bond. And she idealizes Helen. And she thinks Helen is, you know, perfect. Then come to find out that Helen has had her own troubles with her son, just as Alma has had her troubles with her mother. So I think that part, again, we go back to part of the thing that the novel explores, is that people are complicated, and we're all threaded through with our light and dark strings, and that it's part of the weave of being a human being, but it's also what connects us. Even Helen has her own places where she stumbled. And that kind of heroism, to me, is a much more trustworthy heroism than somebody like Balmes, who's just barge ahead, you know, I'm going to get this done. And if I have to buy slaves because I don't have any carrier boys that have been volunteered, and I can't find any because there aren't any orphanages in this town, then I'll just do what I have to do in order to save the world. And he did save hundreds and thousands of people. But, you know, the means, sometimes were a little shady there.
The means were sometimes shady, and he wasn't able to carry out his plan exactly as he wanted or as he had planned. And I think that's the thing. We can plan something in our mind, that formulaic part that you talked about. We can have it all down on paper, and then reality and those threads come in, and it changes the course of history.
Right. You know, a lot of times when people talk to me about the Alma character, they'll tell me, oh, Alma, she's going through a depression. And I think, well, okay, depression is a serious illness, and I'm not, you know, putting that down, but Alma is going through a dark night of the soul, a venerable old state of being, which, you know, Dante, that's how the Divina Commedia starts. He finds himself in the middle of his life, lost in a dark wood. St. John of the Cross, the dark night of the soul. Nowadays, we pathologize it. We call it depression, and then we medicate it, and, you know, the pharmaceuticals step in, and we don't get to have these experiences that they're not easy. A dark night of the soul where, you know, everything is up for question. Nothing makes sense anymore. You're disheartened. You're under a very, very heavy load in a dark cloud. I mean, that's part of Alma makes the choice not to go on antidepressants, to experience that journey.
Right.
That journey. So, but part of the thing that's, you know, that is wonderful about writing is to be in touch with those feelings that are important feelings that we mustn't lose out of the vocabulary of the language, but also out of the vocabulary of our psyches. And part of what we do when we write is that we remind readers and we connect them with those parts of being a human being that are important for us not to lose touch with. You know, it's okay if you do something that is small and self-serving or greedy and you get exposed to feel dishonored, you know, and to feel that to feel wounded and disappointed in yourself.
Yeah, and that was something that in the book, as she goes out to bury those antidepressants in the ground, that I recall that she talks about better to feel those dark feelings and not feel anything
right
at all.
By going through those experiences, when you come out the other end, you're a different person than when you went through it.
Right.
And rather than numb yourself and not change at all.
Yeah. And for Alma, it was very frightening because at the same time as she was in this crisis of the soul, there was a peace that she knew very strongly that she didn't question her love for her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that love story there. There's a love story between her and her husband. There's a love story between this woman who she's idealized, her idealized mother.
Yeah.
And Isabel, there's a love story in that portion of the book. What role does the question of love, and again, is all fair in love and war, or does loving someone justify the means to the end?
Love has got high marks in my book. I think love is one of the important, as I was talking before about feelings that sometimes sound so antique, or their new spin sounds so unlike what I think of that emotion. And I think love, where you become the other, is one of the strong suits of being a human being, one of the good things that we've evolved in ourselves. And I think that's different from attachment. You know, I think that that attachment where you just fear and have to possess someone is a different kind of a love than the one that touches a deeper bottom than that kind of a love that is threaded through with possession and need and attachment. But again, you know, we're human beings, and even that more compassionate, other-directed, loving kind of feeling is often threaded through with the other feeling as well. And again, as with the questions of does the end justify the means, you know, to be able to try to keep in balance both, you know, both your love for the person and also what kinds of choices you're making, which might in some deeper way not be a way to love them, you know, in order to shield them or protect them or keep your life the way that you want to have it. I think part of the things that we learn from stories and poems is that is to entertain the complexity and to engage in it and to live the questions, as Rilke says. And living the questions means to not come up with the easy answers that cut off, you know, living with them and the uncomfortable parts of living with them.
I have this ongoing battle with a colleague of mine about... I gain my strength and a lot of my ideas through fiction. He only reads nonfiction. He wants to know the facts. And I think we need both. Again, it's a balance. But I think that sometimes what the fiction can bring to us is, again, a different way of engaging the question, the space to think about those questions in their entirety. Is that something with what you were aiming for in the book, or is that just a natural part of writing fiction that comes with the territory?
I love the quote by Novalis, the German, I think he was in the 19th century writer, who said, novels arise out of the shortcomings of history. And I think that part of what stories do is that they give us what facts don't give us, which is just the abstraction, the straight facts. They give us felt reality through character. And when you think about it, that is the way we live history in our own time, because we don't live facts. We have a point of view depending on who we are. We have a setting that affects us. We have background. We have characters in our lives. We have the situation that we're living in, and that all affects how we're perceiving the facts. That's why, too, when you hear something from the White House, the facts, and you hear the spin give it to them, and you have those same facts, and you think, wait a minute, how did they get that from those facts?
Right.
In fact, the way we live our own lives is through the same strategies that fiction has, which is truth according to character. Our truths come through our characters. So in some ways, I think stories are closer to how we experience reality than just the bare facts. And one of the things that happens when you just see the bare facts, think about it in terms of this story, saving the world. Think about it in terms of the epidemic, the smallpox epidemic and the vaccine. The bare facts say, you know, you saved 100,000 lives in New Spain and Puerto Rico and Cuba and Caracas and the Philippines and Macau and St. Helena. 100,000 facts. And then, you know, 22 orphan boys. I mean, do the math. The facts say, you know, save 100,000 lives. You know, so, and maybe you still will make that decision, having read the novel. But the anguish that you might have to go through, because now you know the story of those anonymous small fry that often are the people that carry on their backs the great breakthroughs in civilization, maybe it will make you pause before those two facts and be maybe connected to the humanity of those other people. And you might still make the same choice, but I think you'll make it from a much more compassionate space inside yourself. So I'm with you. I think stories lie in order to tell deeper truths than the facts can tell. You know, William Carlos Williams said about poetry, one cannot get the news from poems, but men die daily for lack of what is found there. So there's something that we get from poems, from stories, that feed us in important ways and keep something alive in us that we mustn't let die if we're going to be, you know, a humane human family.
Well, thank you, Julia. I really have been honored to interview today. And again, this is Alice Perry interviewing Julia Alvarez on her new novel, Saving the World, for Between the Covers and KBU Radio.
Thank you for having me.
You're
welcome. This was wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Press Watch will be on at a new time Thursday mornings, 30 minutes earlier at 9 o'clock. I'm Teresa Mitchell, inviting you to tune in at 9 a.m. Thursdays to examine all the stories that corporate media would rather spin or ignore. What's the latest on global warming, imperial wars, corporate-owned government, and the fascistization of the United States? Find out Thursdays at 9 here on KBOO, People-Powered Community Radio.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is the Tuesday morning radio zine. Coming up, we have peace activists Dot Maver and Gary Spanovich, who will discuss the campaign to form a Department of Peace and Nonviolence within the federal government. The host is Michelle Schroeder Fletcher. And at 10 o'clock, we have journalist Tom Zollner, author of The Heartless Stone, A Journey Through the World of Diamonds, Deceit, and Desire. And at 10:30 at Stage and Studio, hear about C.V. Vanka and Rhythmic Delights and their concert with Portland Tycho and singer and actor Jim Chan's one-man show at the Jasmine Tree Restaurant.